Okay, thank you. Okay, so I'm going to remind you what I was doing last time. So we define the X-ray transforms and the Rudin transforms. So this is the X-ray transform integrated over lines. It's good to think about this as transform that sends functions in the X space to functions on lines. And this is the Rudin transform integrated over planes, hyperplanes. In two dimensions, they are the same, just written in a slightly different way. And I also want to remind you one of the inversion formulas, which is the most widely used, to my understanding, the Fuder-Bebb projection. Okay, this one here. And if n is even, this of course is 1, and H is a Hilbert transform that you see on the top. And the reason it's called filter, some people actually don't call that filter because well, this is the exact formula, this is what you should get, but you think of this as some preparation that you operator to apply before operator R prime. And for most practical purposes, you include additional filter here, filter that cuts high frequencies to filter noise and so on. So very often, this is not the way it's used, but people do things like that. I mean, the exact formula is that if n is 2, of course, then this is 1. But they put here some filter, and that will be some frame multiplier. In other words, you go to the variables p and omega, only in the p variable, you choose a function that cuts high frequency, something of this sort, that will filter noise and so on. And once you do that, of course, this is not equality anymore. So yesterday I had a discussion with Adrian, what is the difference between pure and applied mathematician. This is what pure mathematician would do. This is what applied mathematician would do. And this is what the engineer would do. Okay, and what this actually is, okay, so this is actually a convolution with the Fourier, inverse Fourier transform of that. And convolution here can be commuted, well, in intertwined actually, with that. And what you actually get is certain convolution of f. And this is r prime applied to that function, basically. And if that function has this shape in the frequency domain, so this will be some convolution with something that the case thing, something that smoothens a little bit your data. Okay, now it becomes actually equality, of course, you have to relate this to that. And again, this is that with R prime applied to this, basically. So this is what is mostly used in applications. And then you can actually call only this thing filter, and the rest is just has to be there. Okay, and by the way, I put those two files, the two files so far on my webpage. You just have to Google my name, you have to spell it correctly, and those two files are here. So if you have computers, you can actually go there right now. Okay, so the last thing that I didn't have to cover was the support theorem. This is part of the Euclidean theorem. It's a very beautiful theorem due to Helderson, and it answers some practical questions. On the other hand, it's not very practical, we'll see in a moment, about so-called exterior problems. So what is the exterior problem? So you have some ball, or it can be just some set, not necessarily a ball, and you only can integrate along lines outside of this ball. So this is a region which is not accessible for whatever reason. So you know all those integrals. Now this theorem is formulated for the Rudin transforms. In two dimensions, this is the right picture. In higher dimensions, those will be planes. But even in higher dimensions, you have lines, you can always integrate over lines and make them planes. So they're basically the same independently of R or X. And the question is, okay, so you have all this information, only integral in the exterior of some domain, which can be a ball or something more general, what can you recover? Of course, you cannot recover anything inside, but you hope to be able to recover what is outside. And this theorem tells you that we can do that. In that particular case, this is a ball with center 0 and radius a. And it can be generalized, mention this in a moment, to convex S at least. And it says, well, if you know all those integrals outside that ball, you can actually recover the function outside that ball, but there is a condition here, which is essential. It tells you that the function has to decay rapidly. Rapidly means faster than 1 over every polynomial. I mean, just to be able to integrate, you need k to not to be so large, right? But for that theorem, you need this to be true for any k. So this is condition that is actually essential. And under those conditions, you have uniqueness. I mean, this is a linear operator, so when you put 0 here and 0 here, that means actually there is a unique way to recover what is outside. And now you can generalize it easily. So you have set which is, say, convex, something like that. You can choose various balls, one like this, another one like that, and so on. You can play with different balls. And anytime you fix your ball, I mean, you can move the center around, right? There's nothing sacred about the center. The center can be put anywhere of the coordinate system. And when you play with different balls, I'm going to show that actually the support has to be here if integrals over all planes outside of this convex set are zero. Right? So in other words, you can replace the ball by a convex set. Now you can try to make it more precise. If in higher dimensions, if you have lines, you can get in holes. In other words, you may have some surface like that, and then there are lines that can go there, but not planes. You can make it a little bit more precise, but I'm not going to go there. So the proof is due to Helgeson, and it's not short. I mean, it's not really very hard proof to understand, but it takes a few pages, and at least his proof is like that. And first, he proves that for symmetric, radially symmetric functions, and for radially symmetric function, the Radon transform can be written as one-dimensional integral. Of course, everything is one-dimensional. So if f is radially symmetric, the Radon transform is radially symmetric. It doesn't depend on omega. So there's certain integral equation that gives you the Radon transform of Abel type, and then you can just invert it directly and explicitly. Okay, and the next step is actually to reduce the general case of non-radial function to the radial one, which is a little bit tricky. But anyway, so it's a several-page proof, which works quite well. And in some sense, this is kind of analytic contention from infinity, and I'm going to say more about this later, where f is soon to be small. I mean, one easy case is just assume that f has compact support in the first place. Not necessarily here, maybe much larger, but still compact. Right? Let's say this will be one case. The support of f is here. So f is zero here, and this is some kind of analytic continuation from here to the boundary of that ball. Okay, when I say some kind, we'll see later. You can use certain microoptical tools for that. Okay, but here you don't assume that the support is compact, but in some sense, go to infinity. That tells that infinity, the Taylor expansion is zero, roughly speaking. Well, you take it from there, go inside. And actually, there is a beautiful paper by Bowman and I forgot the second author, Stemberg maybe, who actually do exactly that. They explain how you can use analytic arguments to prove that. Okay, the rapid decay condition is essential. There are counterexamples. Choose any polynomial decay, and there is a function which integrates to zero actually everywhere outside of let's say some ball, and then I'm going to talk about this later. As you can actually prove this using analytic wavefront set, you can extend it to much larger families of curves and so on. Right? Okay, and actually the example is easy to understand. You take something of this sort. Of course, this is not defined as zero, but let's for a moment forget this. And if you integrate in the complex plane by Cauchy theorem over any close contour, which doesn't include the zero. Zero is a bad point, right? You get zero, right? Well, okay, now we can stretch it and make it a line. And then integrate over contour like this. This will be small, and you're going to get that integral over all lines which do not intersect zero is zero, just by the Cauchy theorem. But then you have this problem. There's a problem at zero. Well, just modify this function near zero. You're not changing all those integrals, of course. And here's your example that shows that this function integrates to zero outside of this ball, but of course it's not a zero function outside of the ball. It has infinite support. You can take the real part if you don't like complex functions. Okay, so in other words, that condition is really essential for the theorem to be true. And okay, so this is the last thing I want to say about the Euclidean case, at least about the Euclidean case with full data. Important part of the theory are the range conditions, so I'm going to skip them. And of course, another important part is the attenuated excess transform. I'm going to say a few words about this in a while. Another thing that I'm actually going to address in the next talk, well, the next part of the talk is what happens if you have partial data. Right? So I'll stop here with that beautiful theory and go to my second file here. Micro-local methods. Okay, so I call this lecture the weighted X-ray transform, and I'm going to explain in a moment why I want to emphasize on this first. One of the reasons is that it's a relatively easy thing to understand. You don't need to know too much about Riemannian geometry, for example, things like this, and it's interesting enough to be non-trivial. And it covers interesting cases like limited angle transform and so on. But before that, I decided to include some other slides here about so-called local lambda tomography, local and lambda tomography. For some people, they are the same. So support theorem was about the exterior problem. And I'm going to show pictures later that are not very convincing. Actually, I can show them now. You have uniqueness, but how good is that for reconstructions? Well, not very much. Well, I'm going to show that in a moment, and later. Okay, so this is about the exterior problem. Oops, that's a good idea. That's a picture created by Francois Monard. He was here a few weeks ago. And I'm going to talk about this limited angle transform in a moment. The picture that I want to show does. So here we have an X-ray transform, which is measured, computed outside of some disk. All those integrals that do not intersect some ball like this, this is the data. And this is some kind of reconstruction using regularization. Well, let me not explain what that means exactly, but some kind of reconstruction, and you can see that it doesn't look so great. I mean, you can see a lot of things, but there are a lot of blurred things, for example, here. So this is plot of the error. So you see that the reconstruction is not really great. And let me show another picture. Again, I'm going to talk about this right now, about lambda tomography, but look at this. This is the original, this is the reconstruction. I mean, if you have full data, the picture looks much better, right? So this is a strong indication that this exterior problem, well, it has a unique solution according to support theorem, but there should be instability. Well, it's actually experimental evidence, not really proof of that. Another evidence is that in the proof, one of the proofs is based on analytic continuation, micro-local analytic continuation, and that may indicate instability, but this is not a proof of instability. Maybe that proves that we don't know how to do it better. Actually, there is a proof that this should be unstable. I'm going to explain it now. But before that, let's talk about the lambda tomography. Now, we're interested in the interior problem. What is the anterior problem? You have certain region of interest, for example, the heart. And, well, let's make it look like heart. And this is your patient. And you only want to image the heart, right? You don't care about the rest. And integrate over lines, I mean, most reconstructions are two-dimensional, but not all of them, by the way. And so you stay on some slice, and you only want to measure integrals over lines that intersect your region of interest. You don't want to measure that, for example. You don't care about this. Okay, so if you have to use the formula that we have, unfortunately, you have to measure everything. Because there we have several reconstruction formulas. One of them is this one. Well, to compute that, we need this everywhere, then we need that everywhere, and so on. And there's another one, you can put this filter inside, but it's also not local. You put the Hilbert transform, DP, but it's also not local. So the formulas do not allow us to compute this just based on lines that intersect that region of interest. That doesn't mean that there is no way to recover that only from this information. It just means that our formulas are not do not allow us to do that. Maybe there's something else. Actually, there's a proof and counter examples that show that this interior problem doesn't have any solution. You can choose a function which is zero here, and the integrals are not zeros. So this cannot be done, right? There's no uniqueness. But in medical imaging, you want to do it anyway. That matter cannot be done, we want to do it. But what you can want to do is the following. You don't really want to recover the whole object. You want to recover something about it, some partial information. And that partial information, for example, the waveform set, and you know what that is from yesterday's lectures, please. You want to recover jumps across some interfaces. And if you can get those boundaries of jumps and so on, if you can get the shape of the heart, then you can at least say how large it is, if it's enlarged and so on, right? And you can see actually much more. So in other words, we don't really want to solve the problem that cannot be solved, but we want to recover some partial information about the region of interest. And one way to do this is to use, for reconstruction, this operator. I didn't even put double tilde here, just because I mean, this is bad enough, but I want to make it even sound weaker. So why am I doing that? Well, this is the actual reconstruction. Forget about this constant. Doesn't really matter much for applications because most of the picture I have seen, there is some renormalization that has happened automatically anyway. So the constant doesn't really matter. But this operator here is dropped. Right? You don't see it there. And this is the operator that creates all the problems. It's a non-local operator. Okay, so if you remove that operator, of course, this is not F anymore, something else. But at least that formula is completely local. So you're interested in to compute something here. Well, you need only, what is X prime XF? I mean, you take all lines through that domain, if X is here, and then you average, right? This is X prime, this is what it does. So to compute that thing in that domain, you only need the ones that intersect your domain of interest. So this local formula, unfortunately, is not F. Okay, what it is? It is actually that, right? So what you actually compute if you use that formula is F, and then you apply this smoothing operator to that. Well, smoothing of 1 degree. But the waveform set of that is the same as the waveform set of this, because this elliptic operator for the minus 1. So what we're going to get is an image that looks smoother than the original. It will have the same singularities, the same places, but of different strands, right? That will be order minus 1. And it will be completely local. And I'm going to show the picture in a moment. Okay. Another local thing that you can do is to put here the plus. Which is this squared, right? I mean, then we're going to get not F again, but we're going to get that. And again, this is completely local, right? So this is local. If you're interested what happens here, you only need to take those lines. And then this is local operator, of course. You can compute it easily, but you don't get F again, you get that. which is f, which is f, which is differentiated with that operator, basically. So again, this is elliptic operator for the plus one. It has the same singularities, but the same, I mean, it has a singularity in the same places, but they're emphasized, and they multiply by this, right, in the phase space. And you can plot that, which is, again, local. Now the singularities will be stronger. This will emphasize noise, but it will emphasize also the interfaces. Okay, so again, those formulas are local, and now let me show to you some kind of reconstruction. Again, that's a picture. No, I'm going to show this in a moment. That's a picture produced by François Monard. So this is the original, so forget about this. You cannot see that clearly, but this is the version which is a little bit smoother. This is the first reconstruction. We apply 1 over d to that. And this is incorrect. There should be minus 1 half here. In other words, this is what we see here. And what we see here is f differentiated, roughly speaking. And compare this to the original. This is a blurred version of that. Slightly, well, the minus one, and this emphasizes so those interfaces. You see that this is much sharper interfaces here, but also emphasizes the noise. And actually, this is the actual reconstruction. Well, you see that they are not close to that. I mean, function here should be zero, is not zero, is something else, and here should be zero, is not. I mean, the error is not small. What relates them to them? That there are certain elliptic operators applied to the original. Okay, and now if you look closer in these pictures, you can see that the image gets darker maybe when you go inside. It's not very clear, but starting from the boundary going inside, where actually f is zero, you get darker image. Here the image gets a little bit brighter. And what they do is they just take constant image and compute this and that. And you just look at the formulas of the pictures, and you can see that one of them, the function is like that, the other one is like this, and it should be actually one, right? You take a constant image. And they say, well, what if you can take some linear combination of those two? And that linear combination will somehow will compensate for this and that behavior, so we'll make this more or less constant. At least the constant regions will look like constants, and this is not precise, this is just more or less experimental. So, here is the idea of lambda tomography. I'm going to show the reference in a moment. Okay, this is the reference for Ridani and other people. They say, well, why don't we combine both? Take some linear combination. The fact that coefficient here is one is not essential. You multiply the whole thing by constant. So, of course, what it is actually, it is smoothened version of f plus some constant plus differentiated version of f. And again, they're trying to choose mu experimentally, more or less, based on some examples. They say it depends mostly on the size of the region, not so much on the shape, according to them. So that at least when you start with constant, that constant will stay constant near the boundary. That's the that idea. And of course, this is still something else that we have the wavefront, same wavefront set. And this link here, you can click on it, but I already did that. Okay, and this is their paper, actually, about local lambda tomography. And let me show some pictures. Well, this is what the image. This is local, again, this is based on local information. And mu, just take it 45, maybe just by experiments. And no, this actually this is standard. Standard means standard reconstruction. This is the local one. You see that the contrast doesn't really match very well, but you can see the shapes and so on. And here mu is zero, which actually means you take only one of the terms. And here they have some other pictures that's supposed to convince that this works. You see, what it does, it has certain part which is which emphasizes the singularity, certain part that smoothens them. So you see that this has, the boundary is a little bit artificial. So it is, this is the actual image more or less. This is standard reconstruction. So the boundary is emphasized. But if you only emphasize the boundary, you're going to lose the smooth part, and the rest somehow images the smooth part. Again, there is some mathematics here, of course, absolutely. It's not true that there's no mathematics here, but there's a lot of things that are just experimental. On the other hand, this produces nice images and allows it to use with local data. Okay, so now I want to start studying the weighted X-ray transform. And here's the definition. You take a weight in the phase space. In other words, it's a function of points and directions. And then you integrate that. If W depends on X only, then this is just the X-ray transform of W times L. This is not interesting. So that dependence makes it interesting, right? Otherwise, it will be trivial. Okay, and you want to invert that transform. The parameterization here is the same, but now this is not a new function of theta anymore. Well, not always. So now all those lines, they have direction. So the integral over this and line in the same line in the opposite direction are not necessarily the same, because the weight in general doesn't need to satisfy that. I mean, it might, but doesn't have to, right? So each line actually gives you two equations. Okay, so what is the motivation? Visual X-ray transform with incomplete data. Well, this is one of those cases with incomplete data. You may have so-called limited angle tomography. So you have only, let's say, angles in certain cone or certain sector. So you only integrate along lines like this. Or it can be more general subset of lines. And you can model the fact that we only know X-ray for subset of lines. Well, it has to be open for this trick to work. By choosing a weight which is has support inside your set. Of course, it will cut a little bit more because support is inside, and it will cut something more, but you can take sequence of weights which approaches the support, right? So this is one way to model limited incomplete data transforms, but again, I want to emphasize if your set of lines is open. I mean, there's a different kind of transforms in higher dimensions, when you want to restrict the lines to lower dimensional complex of lines. That's a different story. I'm not talking about this. Actually, the analysis is more complicated here. And I'll know a lot about that. Okay, so this is one motivation to study incomplete data transform. There are natural examples which are of this kind. For example, the attenuated one. I'm going to show that in a moment. And in my work, I have seen also other examples that appear just from basically nowhere. I mean, with a weight which doesn't have any special structure, and you want to know what happens. In optical tomography, we have seen such examples. Okay, so this is an important example by itself, the attenuated X-ray transform. What is SPECT? I forgot. Is this single photon emission tomography, computed maybe tomography, yes. Okay, so you measure a source, radioactive source outside the patient's body, so the patient swallows some radioactive liquid, and then it becomes a source, and you want to measure outside the body, but the signal attenuates before being measured, right? Well, okay, I can use this picture, actually. So there's sources here that inside the body, yeah? No, you measure it, well, the source is inside, but you measure it outside. So it's not very well formulated, but you have small sources. You have small radioactive particles here, and they start to emit signals from, well, let me write this picture. in all directions. And this is, before we can measure it here, it attenuates because it gets absorbed and so on. And if you stay here at this point and choose your direction, actually what you measure is a signal coming from all points on this line. So actually you measure some kind of average, integral, well, of the source, but signals come from here, attenuates much more than signal coming from there, for example. So what you get is some asset transfer, but there's a certain attenuation coefficient. And one way to describe it is to use the transport equation. So this operator here, we saw that before. I should really put x there. So this is the directional derivative in the direction of theta, right? And tells that if you differentiate the direction of theta, then there's a attenuation term, A, which somehow depends on the interior of the body, and F is the source. So, by the way, it's a very interesting problem how to recover not only F but A as well, because in reality you don't even know A, but let's say you can approximate it somehow. So A is known here. And this is a differential equation that can easily be solved. So this is first order linear PDE and can be solved the method characteristics, which basically means stay on each line. And on each line you have equation of this sort. What to say, A is the same A but restricted to that line, and F is F restricted to that line. Right? And prime is derivative with respect to this parameter. And you can solve that equation just by usual tricks, for example, integrating factors. Right? And when you solve it, actually this is the integrating factor, more or less. You get the weighted transform, this is the weight, which is easy to understand. So this point is detected here with attenuation, which depends on integral of the attenuation coefficient along this path, right? Okay, so now the question is to invert that transform, and actually the answer is known. It is injected from compactly supported distributions, for example, and there are explicit inversion formulas. So the most well-known one is the one by Novikov, but I want to mention Buchheim also, who has the first uniqueness proof actually, and some kind of formula which is based on complex analysis, still a formula, not so explicit maybe as this one. So we know the answer here, and the formulas, by the way, use complex analysis, even Novikov, and they do not look so simple as the one that you saw here. Yeah, even actually it is in 2D because it can stay in planes, right? So the formula is in two dimensions. In order to apply this formula, you have to do some continuation in the complex plane. For that. And according to some American analysts, and again, I'm just telling what I have heard, that they can be used, some people are actually using them, but if they just use usual regularization, they can get the result faster. On the other hand, theoretically, they are beautiful results. So it's not very often when you have explicit formulas. Okay, so we're going to repeat not the whole theory, but some of it. You want to compute the transpose. By the way, what is the difference between transpose and adjoint? This is just integral of the product. This is in terms of distributions. Right, so if you have nice functions here, this is just integral of the product, right? And this defines transpose, and if you want to define a joint in L2, then the difference will be use L2 product. And if everything is real, there's no difference, but if they're not real, this is actually XF. G-bar. Right? That's a different. When I put star, I mean with respect to the L2 product, and there's a bar here. When I don't put star, I put prime, that means with respect to this L2 product. Even if there are, well, not L2, but this duality. even if they are complex values. Right? Okay, so this is a formula that you can easily derive, and the proof is so simple that it fits on the next slide. I tried to fit it here, but I could not, so I put it on the next slide. Well, I think that I should show you some proofs, at least the most simple one, so this is one of those. So you want to compute the joint, actually the transpose of this operator, so what you have to do is to compute this and try to move the operator on the other side. And just use the definition. Right? So now you really want to move, I mean this is phi and this is psi, but anyway, so you want to move the operator there. So you want eventually here to get a single variable x and dx, right? This is your goal, to write it in a form like this. And what easily comes in mind, well, you have to do some change of variables that makes that a single variable, call that x. So this explains that substitution. So call that x. And this is theta. Z is somewhere here. And S is parameter on this line. So if you use Z on S variable, this is, of course, a diffeomorphic change of, actually very simple trivial change of variables in Rn. And of course, the Jacobian is 1. You can find the inverse easily. You can solve that for Z and theta knowing x. This is simple computation, so maybe change your variables, and this is what we get. And now this is in the desired form, right? There's a phi of x, there's dx. If you drop this on that, you get a form. So this is the whole proof. Okay, so now we have the formula for x prime, then we can apply x prime to x to compute the Schwarz kernel of that, and you know from Alan Greenleaf's lecture that sometimes it's better to think about the kernel, sometimes about the amplitude, depends what you want to do. I mean, eventually I'm going to show that this is a differential operator, but to me the most natural way is to compute first the kernel and then the symbol and the principal symbol. The kernel tells a lot of things that you cannot always get directly from the calculus. Okay, so this is the kernel, just apply x prime to x. But you can do that directly, just take a test function, integrate, and you can take this even without having form of x prime, so it's also a simple exercise. Okay, anyway, this is the result. There's a function here on the top, which looks like that. Now, I take two different ways, because it doesn't really matter if they're equal. I mean, take them different, actually this emphasizes better what happens. In other words, I take two different ways, A and B, and this is what you get. And compare this to the case when the weight is 1. Then, of course, this is 1, 1, you get 2, and this is exactly the format we had before. But before it was a constant, now it's a function. Again, I'm going to show to you that it is actually a pseudo-differential operator. It's almost obvious, but get to that in a moment. And the proof is now simple enough, but I need two slides for that. Okay, so again, this is a proof that is good to see at least once. And the proof, of course, is exactly the same if A and B are equal to 1, that I didn't show to you, so this serves another purpose also. I mean, just apply x prime to x, the weights are different, which doesn't matter. And the first observation is that you can replace t by t minus this dot product, so this thing disappears, which is very nice because it doesn't look so good. You can simplify this formula like that, right? This is a trivial observation. And now you have this integral with respect to t, and you want to use polar coordinates. But integrate with respect to t for positive or negative t, right? You want to use polar coordinate center at x, in other words, to think of x as the origin. But unfortunately, t is not only restricted to positive, it's positive and negative, so we split the integral in two parts. So this is your x, this is your theta. So integrate here, and then integrate there. You split the integral in two parts, in positive and negative t's, and in the second integral, you make change of variables. You replace t by minus t. Right? So integrate here, and then integrate here, but you change the sign of t. So remember, so you get the integral like that, and then integral from here in the opposite direction after you do that. Okay, this is done here. And now you can actually use polar coordinates. So think of x as the center of your coordinate system, t and theta are polar coordinates, and make change of variables in the first and the second integral. Actually, before that, I mean, you see here's theta, replace theta by minus theta here to make it plus. This doesn't change anything. I mean, what you do is on the sphere, you just take a transformation that replaces theta by minus theta, the Jacobian one, of course. And then you get this. And then you use polar coordinates centered at x, and you get the result, right? So I didn't even write the rest because it's more or less obvious, right? So what you do is you make this change of variables. And then, of course, dt, the theta, becomes t to the power m minus, well, if you put here t to the minus 1, it becomes d z. But you don't have this factor here. You only have dt to the theta, so you have to divide by it, right? This explains that singularity here. Let's go back. This singularity comes from the Jacobian, the change of variables from polar to usual coordinates. And that Jacobian is not here, so you have to multiply and divide by it. Okay, so this is the whole proof. And now when you look at this formula, let me show that formula again. It has singularity only when x is equal to y, clearly. I mean, I assume that everything is smooth, W is smooth, B and B. And this is some kind of indication this might be a pseudo-differential operator. I mean, it's not really a proof, but it's a very strong indication. Another indication is if W is constant, it is. It's a Fourier multiplier. So you suspect that it might be a pseudo-differential operator. And if it is, then I'm going to find the amplitude if it is a differential operator, and then when I find something like formal amplitude, I'm going to test it to see if it's actually amplitude, satisfied estimates. Okay, so what I'm doing now is the following. I have a Schwarz kernel. I want from Schwarz kernel to get a symbol if that indeed is a differential operator. And in Monday's talks in the morning, we saw more or less, which maybe so busted, but it was more clear how to get from pseudo-differential operator to the kernel. I now want to get back. Okay, so remember one of the things that Alan Greenleaf emphasizes is that, let me write it here because I have forgotten it. If you have pseudo-differential operator with amplitude, he calls that compound symbol, I think, instead of amplitude. I mean, you have x and y here instead of only x. Well, this is the formal definition of pseudo-differential operator with that amplitude. And the first integration gives you f hat if there's no y. But now, since there is y, you really have to write it this way. And you may say, well, let's find the Schwarz kernel of this. And again, we saw that on Monday, but I'm going to repeat it. And to find the Schwarz kernel, basically erase this. And whatever is left, we call that kernel. Of Of course, this is also the integral. You have to be careful what it means. But this is the expression of the Schwarz kernel. And if you look at this, it looks like inverse Fourier transform of this function with respect to this variable computed to this point. Again, this inverted hat or bird, whatever, is partial Fourier transform of this function, which is partial inverse Fourier transform of this function with respect to this variable. Well, okay, so now I have that actually. Written in that form, by the way. There's more than one way you can take a function of two variables, write it in that form, but somehow, if you go back to our representation, it seems that there's a very natural way. I mean, this is the third variable explains why. Okay, so you have formula for that, and you actually want to find this. Well, let me take the Fourier transform with respect to this variable. And now I'm going to even erase this. I'm going to call that z. I'm going to put z here. And this is partial Fourier transform, so let's call it this way. Okay, now it looks better. So whatever I have here, I take partial Fourier transform of this, z becomes psi, and then this will be amplitude. And then you have to actually show that this is really an amplitude. Okay, so again, this is my function here. It replaces x minus y by z, gets here z over the length of z and so on. And then you want to find the Fourier transform with respect to z. And the computation is here, right? You take Fourier transform, and then you go to polar coordinates again in the z variable, and dz and in polar coordinates, of course, you're going to have dr, d theta, and then that in here, r is z basically. But you divide by r to the minus 1, so this actually disappears because you just cancel it. Right? And you get that simple formula. You may say, well, okay, but yeah, okay, it's fine. Okay, but this doesn't depend on r. And now, at least formally, you can say, well, there's first one integral with respect to r, and we take this and pull this in front, and you have integral with actually Fourier transform the function 1. Well, almost, because you integrate from 0 to infinity. And then you multiply by w and integrate the result with respect to theta. Well, you can put here minus infinity to, of course, you have to think of this associated integral of Fourier transform or something, but you can put here minus infinity to infinity and divide by 2, because we're integrating even function 1. We're not really integrating it, because the integral is not classical, but anyway, you can do that. And now this is the Fourier transform of the function 1. Evaluate at the point theta dot psi, right? But the Fourier transform of the function 1 up to a constant is delta. Actually, it's 2 pi. Delta divided by these two, this is how you get pi here. So again, this delta here comes from the Fourier transform of the function 1 evaluated to this point. This is plain just formal. So if that is really a symbol, then you're done. You show that this is pseudo differential operator and this is a symbol. Okay, so let me explain what actually means this formula. Because it looks so nice and neat, but there's something hidden there. So I have the unit sphere and theta belongs here. But then you also have some psi which is fixed. Let's say that is points upwards. And integrate over the sphere, but you have this delta function which restricts theta to all thetas which are perpendicular to psi. Again, psi is fixed. You can change it somehow, then you're going to get something different. And what you actually get is, if you take the support of the integrand, the support of the integrand is on the sphere, but you have to stay on this plane perpendicular to psi. So you're actually here. So this is integral over this circle. Well, it's circle in three dimensions. In two dimensions, those are just two points. This is a three-dimensional picture, basically. In two dimensions, the sphere is actually a circle, and then this is psi. And then actually you have two points. In higher dimensions, this is a sphere with dimension m minus 2. Right? So integrate there, w. So is that a symbol? Or amplitudes. I mean, I like to call things like that amplitudes. And things like that symbols. Well, it's homogeneous of order minus 1. How do you know that? Delta has this homogeneity property. And of course, W is smooth. The result that you get is a smooth function away from psi equal to 0, away from this singular point. And the result is nice and smooth function, which is homogeneous of order minus 1. But of course, it has singularity near 0. So it's actually 1 over psi times sine function, which is smooth function in the sphere. So it's not really a symbol because it has this singularity. I mean, symbol is supposed to be smooth. But then you can cut that singularity. You can take some cutoff function for psi less than 1 by norm, and then leave the rest. And when you do that, if you cut this in some compact domain with respect to psi, you don't get symbol in it, but you get a smooth incorporator. At least you don't get... So how do you know you get... So you get Fourier transform of something. Then you restrict the Fourier transform to a compact set, will still multiply by something which has weak singularity. And you can show that what this thing does is makes your function smooth. I mean, if you just take the Fourier transform and restrict to a compact set, and take the inverse Fourier transform, I'm going to get a convolution with an analytic function. Well, I don't really do that because there's this factor, but you can show that this is a smoothing part. In other words, you can just cut away that singularity, and the penalty is a smoothing operator, and what is left is a symbol. So this is really amplitude, sorry. So this is really amplitude, so this is really a sort of differential operator of order minus 1. Okay, if n is 2, then this integral reduces to sum of two points. And what is the meaning of that? Well, take any orientation. Take a vector and call either this psi perpendicular to that one. Just. Of course, it doesn't really matter because you take the sum here. And if you go back and look what W is, actually, you already symmetrize. You take the even part of AB, so actually it reduces to that. Okay, so this explains the theorem. If A and B are smooth, then this is a classical pseudo-differential operator for the minus 1 with amplitude given by this. And in order to get the principal symbol, well, I forgot to put here X. We have to put X here, right? The principal symbol, you can get it just by replacing this by X. So this attack, there should be X here. Okay, and if n is equal to 2, the integral is understood as before, and this is the full amplitude. And if you want to get the symbol, the principal symbol, you replace y by x. Okay. You can also write it that way. Okay. Now, our goal is to recover the reference set of f given that. I mean, we really want to recover everything if you can, but at least we want to start with that. We want to recover the singularities. And recovering of the whole thing is not easy, and actually, in general, it's impossible. But recovering the singularities is more or less automatic. And our first step is to apply the back projection. Now I really need the star here, so if W is not real, I want to put a bar on top of it. And I'm going to start a disoperator instead of x, and if it's elliptic, then we have Knuth parametrics, and then we can record the singularities. Right? That's the idea. So apply the adjoint. Again, if that is real, you can put prime there, nothing. And use that operator as the first step towards recovery. So that was similar to that local tomography and so on. So let's see. Well, maybe I should stop somewhere here. Well, okay, let me, it's time for me to stop, right? Okay. Let me stop here because this is a natural breakpoint. I mean, I'm going to continue in the afternoon. Because eventually I really care about this operator. I want the second to be the same. Why? Because if you study injectivity of this operator, this is the same as injectivity of that, just integration by parts, right? I mean, if you put here different ways, then you don't know what to get. But what do you want to put different ways for? There's no penalty for this. And secondly, I know application which, where actually another way it really helps. You want to have that flexibility, but what you really need here them to be the same, because again, this injective, if and only this injective, which is trivial, but if you change that, well, I don't know. But sometimes you want to have it.